Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BiteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.BiteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Dr. Elliot Maynard, and he is author of Brave New Mind, Living in a Future Science. Dr. Maynard believes that his new master paradigm, Future Science Technology, is the quantum field science for the future. He is convinced that integrating traditional linear science with non-linear consciousness technology will yield new breakthrough solutions for the global problems that we face as citizens of planet Earth. Future Science Technology is a unique system which supports the development of a new and superior human mind, a master paradigm containing 25 keys to personal and planetary enlightenment. You can find Brave New Mind available in the Kindle format at Amazon.com, and you can also find several YouTube videos by just going to YouTube and typing in and searching for Elliot Maynard. Okay, with that, I'd like to welcome Elliot to the show. Good day, Elliot. Thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me, Robert.
It is my pleasure, and as I briefly mentioned to you before we came on air, your book is probably one of the best books I have read in a long time. For me, it was very enlightening, and I read a lot. So, first of all, I just wanted to make a comment for those listeners out there that I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was great information.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, you're very welcome. Well, let's see. We have got a lot to talk about now. If anyone would like to ask Elliot any questions right after the break at the bottom of the hour, you can call in at 619-789-4359. Or also, if you would are listening live in the chat room and would like for me to pose a question to Elliot, just feel free to type it in there, and we will be sure to do that. So, well, first of all, let's talk a little bit about future science. And you know, you set up a 25 master keys toward this future science technology. So, would you mind sharing with the listeners just a little bit about what that format or that particular view is?
Yes. Future science technology is essentially, I like to liken it to a new operating system, which is analogous, of course, to your computer, just as Microsoft or Apple have. And this essentially is analogous to consciousness, just as computers work in similar ways to consciousness. Essentially, what has been created here is a new way, a set of new pathways, which are the 25 keys. It's as if we've shone a light on several 25 different areas of perspectives of the world. These include development of the intuitive senses, future science music, future science art, future science and medicine, et cetera, et cetera. And the difference in this is this is a cluster of master paradigms or pathways, and each one interfaces with what we call the universal quantum information field. Essentially, it's a matter of simply opening one's mind to the existence of this, and then it will begin to become part of a person's consciousness.
Okay, yeah, you know, and I'll tell you, those the perspectives that you provide are very for me, they make a lot of sense. You know, they answer a lot of of questions. I mean, you know, questions and some of the kind of conflicts with the way that the world seems to work and what we're, you know, what we're currently experiencing. So, you know, in that sense, that quantum aspect, you know, it really does, for me, it provides clarity. And so I like that. Now, one of the things that you talk about early on in the book is that there's what you call a future man or homo novus, I believe is the term
yes.
used. Would you mind explaining, are we becoming something new?
Well, hopefully, it's not just hopefully, it's essentially a survival imperative for the human race and also for our planetary, if you want to call it an organism, our planetary home. And I give people a simple little analogy. You don't need to stay in a cave for 30 years anymore and meditate or be under the bow tree or go through rigorous ascetic practices, because this has already been done. The way has been opened by those who did this, so we still need to honor them. But because of the speeding up of the what people call the vibrations and the world we exist in now, things are happening so fast that we need to find new ways to adapt and evolve as humans. We're still working back in the with the mind that was kill or be killed, the cycles of empires and destruction and the pillaging of the environment to build ships, war machines, and churches, all of these things. And what we need to do is get beyond this and begin to think in terms of creating sustainable futures for the planet and for future generations.
Yeah, you know, and that's the one thing that I also really liked is that global planetary perspective. And, you know, you talked about kind of shifting away from the old. I know in one particular key, you talk about overcoming tribal beliefs, you know, and so it seems that, you know, those old patterns, it seems like they're, you know, people are shifting away from them, but I don't know. Some people I know, it seems like they're still acting kind of tribal.
Well, if you look back at history, you'll find that during the various cycles, there were those leaders that tried to push the paradigm, but if they were too far ahead of their times, they often simply got roasted over the coals or tortured. It's rather terrible. And so, as I said, we still need to honor those people. But now the time is right for bringing hard technology and consciousness technology together, for the simple reason that in many cases hard technology has essentially hit the wall. And when physicists start to get down to smaller and smaller and smaller particles, the line between hard technology and consciousness technology becomes very blurred and merges. So this is the basis for the whole thing.
Yeah. Now, you're talking about you know, the hard technology and conscious technology. Is that kind of analogous to or similar to linear and nonlinear type thinking?
Essentially, they are parallel, yes. It's a handy thing for us to use this right and left brain, right being the intuitive part of the brain, that part of the brain that has ensured the survival of humans for not thousands but millions of years, probably. And the fact that we are so arrogant in our new techno minds to think that the new linear mind, which occurred after the Industrial Revolution and the advent of the Gutenberg press, which allowed for multiple copies, and then this went on to media and all the things that have been developed, telegraph, telephone, fax. Now we have all kinds of cell phone communications, to the point where we've now polluted our environment with what we call electronic smog.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got plenty of that. Plenty of that. Now, can you talk a little bit about you know, how the non-local consciousness thinking kind of is applicable, you know, to our lives? I mean, you know, right now, I mean, I've really kind of you know, opened up to that whole idea of, you know, you don't go necessarily have to go from A to B to C to D, you know, to get to, you know, where you want to go, that, you know, sometimes things happen that can leapfrog you from one spot to another. So would you mind talking a little bit about how that because that's non-local, isn't it? Where it's
absolutely
something that
is, what you're doing is yes, non-local. You're already working in this quantum field.
Okay. So
I make a simple analogy, if mm-hmm. this will help. Between a remember the reel-to-reel tape decks and mm-hmm. Any kind of tape deck that you have. When you want to go to a certain place on that tape, you know, a specific song, or you simply have to wind it backwards or forwards. Now, if you think of a compact disc, this is very analogous, very similar to the quantum field, in that you simply go to that place on the compact disc where that particular spot of information is. We do this every day without even thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, that is... So, how will that, you know, one of the things you talk about a lot in your book is healing. You talk about, you know, different types of not only, you know, healing of the body, but also healing of the planet, which I also very much appreciate. How does non-locality, how is healing facilitated with a non-local kind of perspective or approach?
Well, that's a very good question, and essentially, any kind of healing that is done without drugs, in other words, without our conventional technology drugs, not the more primitive herbs and these things that have been around for 1,000 years, is essentially transmitted through various cultures. They have learned, there have been shamans that have been gifted with special sight to see which herbs can heal what conditions and when to pick them, et cetera, et cetera. All of this interfaces with the planet, and many times a shaman can learn, for instance, by following a bear that has a nose probably 1,000 times better than a human, and watching the bear and see what it eats and when it eats it. Now, if I can jump a little ahead, how does this relate to a person in business, their personal life? And let's get right down to earth here. Again, I said it's not necessary to stay in a cave for 30 years. It's this simple. Imagine a little switch in your mind, if you want to, a red switch. And we have been taught from the time we have any remembrance at all, usually by our parents, our teachers, the church, or any kind of business institutions, never to believe anything we cannot prove to be true. And that prove usually means statistically valid, etc., etc. Essentially, what I say is flick the switch so that you don't disbelieve anything you cannot prove to be untrue. If you can do that and visualize that and just hold that thought in your mind, absolutely anyone, I can guarantee you, your life will start to change in ways you can only begin to imagine.
Okay, so the idea is then is for us to, I want to kind of get that one again, you know, because just imagine in our mind a switch and going from to recognizing that just because we cannot prove something or see something that we don't necessarily have to believe that it's not possible?
It's real.
Yes. Okay, that's
and
real.
That's the first,
okay.
That's the normal, let's call it normal, consciousness.
Okay.
Now, we simply make the switch that we open ourselves to the possibilities that anything can be true. It's that simple. This is what the geniuses of history have done. The difference is that most of them, the great painters, the great leaders, the great warriors, most of them were not consciously aware that they were getting guided from some higher information source, be it spiritual
mm-hmm.
guides or the working in the quantum field. The difference now is that we can do this consciously, and that gives it amazing power, and we can begin to work in quantum ways. A simple example, I always encourage people to create win-win situations in their life. Now,
mm-hmm.
if you want to go one better, let's make it win-win-win. Sometimes you can make a deal or an agreement, whether it be with your business partners or children, that everybody, three people win. Now, if you could imagine something like win to the X power and having a relatively small number of people on Earth who are able to create something of that magnitude that would simply fly out over the global brain internet, you know, they used to call
mm-hmm.
it the global consciousness. Amazing changes and shifts can take place. And this is happening every day, even with the news of something new has appeared. You know, all of this is happening in front of our eyes. But most people are so busy just trying to survive and thrive that they don't have time to really see this.
Yeah. Okay, you know, I truly live by, you know, win-win and, you know, that extra win. You know, quite often I'll have, you know, guests whose work might complement each other and create, I usually say that there's an opportunity for mutual benefit, you know, for them, you know. And,
absolutely.
And then,
yes.
And even beyond that, you know, there may be something that is yet unseen, you know, so that might be that third win. So, so I can, you know, I can understand, you know, I mean, and usually the response is extremely positive, you know, I mean, and it seems to reverberate, you know, beyond just the whole idea of the two working together. So I can see where, you know, more people engaging in that type of decision-making, you know, and kind of guidance would, you know, really kind of lift things up, you know, lift the world up. So, okay, you know, that's a great practical way of applying that. So that's great. One of the things that you talk about in your book, one of the master keys, and I want to kind of go through and we're going to talk about a few of them. One of them, the master key one, you talk a bit about supersensonics, and it's a tool for evolving human potential. What, if you wouldn't mind sharing with the listeners, I know what it is because I read your book, but would you mind explaining what supersensonics is?
Yes, supersensonics was a term, I believe it was coined by Dr. Christopher Hills, who was the head of the first Consciousness Institute. I worked with him, and I have a PhD in consciousness research. It works on it's the recognition and support of developing the intuitive senses, because after all, it was these intuitive senses which I touched on earlier that allowed us to survive. If a cave bear is starting to stalk you, you better have your antenna system out there and learn to expand it so you can detect it, so you can still run and get away and hide somewhere. I mean, a simple example. But
yeah.
Essentially, right now, if we continue on this linear pathway with the same way we're going, using the older paradigms, we're doomed. So there comes a time now where we must develop these senses. And in my world, I have a little education system called the University of Future for all ages, but this would encourage children at their earliest level and having their parents encourage them, if they have imaginary friends, encourage them to talk to them, because they're small children often have not lost all of their abilities from past lives, and so they still have awarenesses. And if it can be encouraged, I would teach dowsing in my school. I would teach kids as they get older to practice remote viewing and all other forms of extrasensory perception. And this essentially would change the human consciousness into a much more enlightened sense in the fact that they would be far more advanced and begin to stop this cycle of kill or be killed and the building and destruction of empires and the raping of the environment. That's a lot, and yeah. I hope you got it.
Yeah, it is. Well, you know, and the one thing that I'm also that I liked in your book is you touch on the, you know, the areas of past life, of you know, vibration, psychic cleanliness. I mean, it's kind of like you don't leave any stone unturned, you know, when it comes to looking at you know, paradigms and different types of worldviews. So you know, the idea of, you know, encouraging children at, you know, at a young age to, you know, not only talk to their friends, but also to, I mean, because they're kids, you know, do not have the judgment and the, you know, the filtering kinds of systems that we, you know, we ingrain into them, you know, just through the socialization and education system. So, you know, in many ways, they're truly a lot more intuitive than many adults when it comes to, you know, just the essence of, you know, what, quote, what is real and what isn't real.
Absolutely, and this new learning environment, instead of taking these god-awful things called norms, there is no such thing as a, well, you can make a statistical norm, but each human, each animal, each consciousness on this earth is unique. And so this new school would create an environment that would stimulate each child from their own center of talents, abilities, aspirations, what makes them happy, and then begin to put together a package for each person which would help them, an education program, so they could enhance their abilities and then fit them in to the real world, instead of trying to make everybody, you know, focus on a norm. Just a small example would be the scholastic aptitude test. Myself, I have a math block, and that kind of always was a stumbling block for me. I do math in different ways. I can understand it. And I once told a professor in graduate school who wanted me to take higher calculus, I said, look, I'm not good at this area. I said, if I need a mathematician, I'll go find one. I'll hire one. And he got mad and put a nasty letter in my you know, records. But
folder.
I have never, everything that I said in my life since that time has been true. And there's nothing wrong with being bad in math or something else, or because you simply work toward enhancing and integrating your the best things you can do and what makes you happy and fulfilled into your life, if this is possible.
Yeah, yeah, very much. It kind of reminds me, there was, I think it was an old Star Trek or one of those old kind of shows where, you know, the kids were groomed to whatever their talents were, their innate talents. And I thought, you know, that would be wonderful if we had, you know, the ability to, you know, recognize, you know, what innate talents, you know, each child had, and to foster that, you know, and to, you know, to provide the proper support system so that it could blossom.
Well, you know, I know that the things in many of the things, most of the things in that book are very far out, putting parentheses, for most people. Mm-hmm. However, virtually everything that I have written down there, I have either experienced directly through other experts in the field, such as psychic healings, such as channeling, which I think should be a very legitimate practice. I worked into that area as a scientist and actually would work with different channelers and cross-reference things and ask these higher entities that were being channeled scientific questions rather than, how's my dog Tig doing, you know, that passed away 3 years, or my Aunt Millie? And which, you know, most people want to know those questions. This happened to a point with the fellow named Daryl Anka, who channels an entity called Bashar. Now, he's been doing this for close to 30 years. And the questions I ask, the fellow that was videotaping the gathering actually emailed me and said he had noticed that I had asked these very specific questions, and that he was a scientist too, and he also had asked similar questions of the Bashar entity. And it's amazing how much we can learn from these other ET perspectives. Now, if this seems strange, again, it's all well documented. There are thousands and thousands of pages, all you can read on all of these subjects. They're well referenced. It's simply that the mainstream consciousness, humans, simply don't want to go there because it removes them from their comfort zones. And there is a segment of the new adventurers who do want to move into the future and become that future human.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, as far as your, you know, what you've written as being out there, I guess it depends on where you are, because I'm kind of out there too, so it wasn't really far for me to travel to, you know, to understand that. But I think for some people, you know, it does kind of remove them from their comfort zone, and like you say, sometimes people are just so wrapped up in the day-to-day survival aspect that, you know, some of the keys that you present, you know, are topics that it's like, well, first of all, you know, why would I even want to think about it? And then, oh my God, that makes my head hurt, you know, to be able to, right, you know, to try and grasp some of that. So, I mean, you know, I can understand that. But the one thing that you do well is that you know, kind of bring it down to earth. You know, you bring it kind of, you know, you state some of the things that we are, you know, experiencing, and then provide the perspective. Like, you know, one of the master keys that you have, you spend a good amount of time in, is the human and planetary eco-evolution. And you talk about some of the challenges, you know, that are, you know, facing us as far as, like, the ice sheet melting and you know, the deforestation and you know, all of that kind of thing. What is your perspective of, you know, kind of where we are in this whole, you know, eco kind of dilemma, where it seems our systems are really kind of getting shaken, and how does the future science perspective help address some of those issues?
Wow, that's a big question. Let me back up just a tiny bit.
Okay.
The dawn of this kind of planetary consciousness and what was quite a few years ago called the global brain was generated when man got out into space so that he could get the first view of Earth as a whole. Now, Ed Mitchell, the astronaut, was already he had psychic abilities. He experienced a very dramatic psychic healing when he was a teenager. This is what opened him up to this. And unbeknownst to NASA, he had a few friends. He was doing some psychic experiments of his own. And, of course, he's founded the IONS Institute. Now, to get back to the whole, our planet is essentially out of balance. It's out of balance for many reasons. There has been HARP technology, the high altitude
resonance. Right.
There's been massive pollution. There are the chemtrails, which are discussed somewhat in the book. All these things, and not only that, the sun has been rather reactive. All of this has added up to more turbulence, which is essentially speeded up, essentially in the past, over longer periods of time. This speeds up the natural process of evolution. I fully believe right now that we've reached the point where the evolutionary mechanism that was originally programmed into our genes is no longer adequate for us to cope. And so if we continued solely on that pathway, there's no question we will just multiply until the Earth is clogged up and we'll head down with a Titanic. So now consciousness technology becomes an evolutionary imperative, because through consciousness technology you can adjust to these changes and find solutions.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, I mean, I found that, you know, you a lot of those different ecosystems, you know, right now there's pretty much a pessimistic view of our trajectory, you know, kind of where we're headed. And it's, you know, to me, it seems that, you know, a lot of the benefits that, you know, that nature can provide are just being destroyed and eliminated, and it's kind of, I'm hoping, you know, that you know, the whole idea of a, you know, that global consciousness and maybe more attention, you know, to the, you know, the ecosystems, that, you know, things will shift, you know, toward more respectful, you know, being more respectful, you know, of the planet that we live on. You know, it's just, you know, that venture out into space, and, you know, we've kind of seen our planet from a distance for a while there, but I don't know if the course has changed.
Well, yes, and actually, right before the eyes of those who are aware of it, companies, corporations are already being formed to mine the moon and go on to Mars and do the same. Now, what is interesting is that as we do this, each we'll have a lunar consciousness too and a Mars consciousness, people have told me. But in extending ourselves like this, again, it's another... Let's go and grab some minerals. Now, before we do this, believe it or not, I worked with a NASA teleconference for several years, a group of ex-NASA and other scientists from all over the world. And we used to speak about, there were some people who already have national parks planned for the moon and for Mars to protect certain areas so they will not be destroyed. They're already thinking that far ahead. So that's kind of a good strike for those humans. Now, how can this smaller percentage of spiritual warriors, you might call them, and I call them that, this is the brave new mind, because it takes certain bravery to go beyond that fear of change and fear of the unknown and fear of death and all these things to remove these barriers. And what the solution is, that if we have a relatively small number of people on our planet that work in a framework of what's called coherent consciousness, a smaller number can change the whole mass of humanity instantly. This happens virally, almost instantly. And this has been proven out by John Hagelin, who's head of the Maharishi University, who was one of the people that instituted what's called invincible defense technology. And essentially this is a group of trained meditators who have, they've proven it statistically, that when they focus putting positive energy on certain trouble spots of the world, that the incidence of violence have very, very significantly dropped. And the root concept is that if we work at the very base of the quantum field where things become particles, tinier and tinier, and those smaller particles have been proven to be influenced by thought, by observers, mm-hmm. this makes a small coherent group very powerful. There are already military units being trained in countries like Ecuador for this. So this is no myth, and it's happening in other countries too. Now, this could be done also by civic groups or church groups or school groups, for instance.
Huh. Well, you know, that when you recognize, that power of thought, and of collective thought. It does seem like, for example, whenever I believe there was some kind of, I can't remember the exact measurement, but it was, when that tsunami hit, that there was seemed to be a massive, increase in, having to do with, consciousness or compassion, that kind of thing, when that happened. And it seems that, whenever there is any kind of mass challenge or disaster, that there does seem to be that collective, that the collective seems to, influence people who might not otherwise be, it's people who, might be more callous toward someone on the other side of the planet's challenges. All of a sudden, if, your neighbor and all your social media group are all, expressing, compassion, concern, and those kind of thoughts, that it seems to influence them as well. So is that kind of what may be the effect of this, concentrated thought pattern would be?
Well, yes, that's a very good observation, because that's a phenomenon that seems to surface whenever there is some big disaster in the world. You'll get people reaching out from the rest of the planet, and it's a wonderful example. And yes, with that tsunami, if you remember, they actually turned swords into plowshares by bringing a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier over there. And the captain of that boat, they set up water processing, and they're using this power. They put lines ashore so people could have lights. They brought generators. They flew in, helicopter missions to bring water and rescue people. But the captain went around and started talking to his crew members, and he found them all very busy doing things they'd never imagined they would do, and they were begging to go on these missions. He said he'd never experienced the crew being happier, because yeah. aircraft carriers stay out to sea for a long time, and it can be very boring,
Yeah. Well, I would love, to see the, that kind of coordinated, conscious activity, directed toward, the trouble spots and kind of reducing, because it does seem to, they seem to be everywhere, and it's, if when one calms down, another one seems to pop up, and it would be nice to have things just calm down planetarily for a while.
Yes, we call that the whack-a-mole theory, my wife and I. That little
game
where you hit one and another one pops up somewhere else.
Exactly. Well, a couple of the areas that you touched on, too, with future science that I found surprising when I got to those sections was one of them, you talk about living artworks. A lot of times I don't think people necessarily would lump, science and artwork, together, is in one thought. Would you mind explaining a little bit about the idea of living artworks?
Yes. I've sort of been involved in art all my life. My mother had training as a commercial artist, but about 30 years ago, I'd always loved sculptures, and I decided to create a set of basic art pieces that were inspired from, I asked for inspiration from other realms, other dimensions, other civilizations, anywhere that it would come, and just put that in my mind. And I taught myself how to weld. I've also done many paintings. But especially with the welding, I will use ancient pieces of iron and integrate them with different kinds of crystal and beautiful marbles, and they sort of come together, perhaps analogous to a little choir. And when they're together in the right way, inspired by what you might call a stream of consciousness from who knows where, the thing comes together almost magically. And then before I kind of got the idea of blessing each piece and setting it free. And I have had several psychic people who came in independently and started telling me these things were shifting around in the other dimensions, and there were flashing lights and turning wheels and things that... So this kind of validated the postulate I had originally set up. And very often I use the dowsing rods to make sure that I'm putting certain, which piece goes where and should I do this or not. So it's all based on the consciousness technology. And the funny thing about these art forms is that you'll create one and then another one in a couple of weeks, and all of a sudden you look at it and you said, you know, that I can't imagine doing that or how I did it, and the whole book was essentially done that way. But this is kind of a symptom of, that you are accessing the quantum field and interacting with it. And also this includes the spiritual guides and entities that can help you, that you can call in, your muses or whatever, however you wish to call them.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, when I did my one little book, my first book, I mean, that was very much the case. I mean, it was, you know, I would walk in the morning and kind of be, you know, shown what to write, and it would write, and it just unfolded like that every day. I mean, and I would go back, you know, after it was done and think, wow, where did that come from? You know, it's like I had, you know, truly just didn't, it wasn't one of those, it wasn't like a conscious activity, you know, it was truly outside myself in a way when that activity is going on.
Bingo. And you see, right now, if our listeners can realize there are two people that can do this, and I know there are hundreds and hundreds more of the people that I interface with, you can do it too. Anyone can learn to do this by opening themselves. Sometimes you've got to sit down and start working because you have to be there for it to happen so you can write it down. And once you try this with your mind open and then occasionally observe the learning process and try to put that chattering squirrel mind, the left brain, a bit over on the shelf, the stream of consciousness will come, and it can work for you in writing and presentations and creating music, poetry, art, and good business, too.
Yeah, yeah, very much. Now, you talk a little bit in your book about learning to shift frequencies. Is that kind of what we're doing when we're in that mode, is that we're maybe vibrating to a different frequency?
Absolutely. This people have called this this state we're in, the point we have reached vibrationally, which is kind of a fuzzy term, I know, but in other words, things have speeded up. Everything has speeded up. If you look back 200-300 years, it's mind-blowing. And I'm going to give an interesting example, which kind of really opened me up to a new way to think. I attended a channeling session by this Daryl Anka, who does this entity, Bashar, and he mentioned that if you took a person from today, anyone, almost anyone, and brought them back 100 years in a time machine and put them down in England or somewhere, they would appear to the people there to be glowing. No, I found that rather remarkable. This is kind of an ET viewpoint. So, yes, they call this the ascension frequency. It's a term they use. So what this means is we are bombarded by all kinds of outside stimuli, many of which we have to kind of defend ourselves against to keep our own center of consciousness or to work with a group that we're working with. But when we go beyond this again and learn how to shield ourselves properly and keep ourselves psychically clean, we can begin to really, really advance in terms of our own consciousness, our perspectives, our ability to handle personal and family affairs, and especially environmental, let's call it paying forward. And that's what really what this is all about, because when a person becomes a bit more wise or enlightened, however you want to put it, the offer you can't refuse is if you want to keep going on this path, you have to share it, this gift, with others, because that means that they can do it too. That's the gift that is passed on. And if we can keep thinking like that, we would have a much better world very fast.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that, you know, that whole and that's the one thing that I've noticed just in, you know, having some of the, like, the inspirational people on who have gone through challenges and kind of survived. And, you know, the whole idea of taking that experience, you know, and, you know, paying it forward, you know, basically helping others, you know, maneuver or kind of navigate through the challenge with less stress and maybe with a little bit more ease seems to be, it seems to give a whole lot of purpose for the experiences, the challenging experiences that we sometimes go through.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the 25 keys involves removing the fear of death, removing the death barrier, so-called. Imagine what a different world it would be if children were taught that when their grandmother or parents die, when they die, it's like a graduation ceremony instead of something to be afraid of. And think of how many people's lives are fear-based because of the fear that's been implanted in them by the various religious and, standardized organizations that like to keep control. Now, if you go a little bit further with this, I found a strange and wonderful example of how all of this works in a recent hospice group I gave a presentation to. And one of the presenters, his name is Daniel Brinkley, has had 4 flatline medical experiences. In other words, he's been clinically dead 4 times. He's visited heaven 4 times and come back with a full memory there, what we call heaven. And he has, he says, I don't care anymore because I don't mind. I'll stay here a little longer if I have to. But think of how this would free humans, especially as they get older, from this fear, and what a different world it would be. And he said that one of the reasons this is becoming more and more a public issue and knowledge is that so many people are brought back to life that would not have been 50 years ago by our medical technology. So it's interesting to put those two together.
Yeah, you know, and I agree that, you know, kind of, you know, minimizing that, you know, that fear or eliminating the fear of death or recognizing that, you know, sort of life goes on, so to speak, after death, you know, is can really, I think, you know, eliminate a lot of the I don't know, the reluctance that people have maybe, you know, for kind of, you know, what this life is about. But also, to me, it also seems to be, you know, real important for people to not be ready, not be over anxious, you know, to enter that realm. It's like, you know, it's good when it comes. It's okay when it comes, but, you know, let it come in its own time. You know, we don't want those kids graduating prematurely, you know.
So. No, one of the things that the cognoscenti in that area know is that suicide is not an easy out, because you'll just have to go back on that, what they usually call the wheel of karma. Now, if you're going the other way with a quantum field, it's possible to move out of that framework and not have to reincarnate in the human form at all, unless a person wants to.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and I, you know, when it comes to, you know, to suicide, I, you know, really have, you know, no judgment on that. I mean, to me, it's just one of those things where, you know, it's a choice. And the, you know, the whole idea is, for me, is just stressing the amazing things that can be accomplished in this realm, you know, while we're here, you know, and that cannot be in maybe a different dimension, you know, and so it's kind of like, while you're here, just maximize it, and you know, when the time comes to be in that that next stage, whatever it is, you know, then maximize that one, you know. So kind of like, you know, make the best of wherever you are. So one of the things that you talk about also, we're getting down to about 8 minutes, and I was going to take a break, but this is just too fascinating to have taken a break. So one of the things you talk about too is radionics. You know, you talk a little bit in your book, one of the master keys is called Radionics, a Quantum Technology for Human and Planetary Healing. And you kind of talk about that in a couple different technologies. Would you mind talking just a little bit of what radionics is?
Yes, radionics was invented in the early 1900s, I think, by a man named Abrams, and it's a system that does not make any sense in linear electronic terms. The instruments are basically very simple. They include a transmitter, what's called a tuning well, which is a tuning coil, and what's called a rubbing plate, which is another coil with a plate over it, just a piece of plastic. And the way this works is the healer or the operator of this machine uses a sample of blood, urine, hair, or even a Polaroid, especially a Polaroid photo of the person in the tuning well, and the instrument will use the rubbing plate by rubbing their fingers over it, and at a certain point when several dials are turned, say a dial is turned, the plate creates resistance that the operator can feel. So you see, this is a kind of a consciousness interface here. And you do the same with, say you have the two dials, and you get a setting for the disease condition of the patient. And then you flick a switch, which instead of receiving these vibrations, it sends counteracting vibrations which function like a muffler on a car, which uses resonant patterns to cancel noise cancellation technology. The earphones you wear in an airplane when you don't want to hear the engine, constant hum. So now the interesting thing is that this will work anywhere if the patient can be halfway around the world. And this was declared illegal, even though the groups of doctors were given only terminal patients and cured a great many of them. This is very well documented. The existing medical establishment of the time just couldn't bear to deal with all of this, and so they outlawed it. Now, radionics was kept alive in certain states, in certain areas. In Europe, It was actually granted credentials, and there's training and certification for radionics devices. There are an array of different devices which are interfacing now with a computer. Now, what kept things going was that others were working on increasing crop yields, reducing pests in crops, and they would take a sample of the crop or a picture of the part of the field and have another part that wasn't treated, treat it radionically, and the deal was that the farmers would not pay unless it worked, because they're pretty tough nuts, and they hang on to their money for good reason, because it's hard to come by. So in this field, it kept going, and also in veterinary medicine, especially with thoroughbred racehorses and pets. And it's been used very successfully, and nobody complained about that because they got cures for these animals without surgery or pain. Or in some cases, it was used to enhance and implement the surgery, facilitate it, make it easier.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. You know, that to me, you know, it's just amazing. Also, you know, the technology that's out there, and sometimes how some people are just fearful, and some of it's banned, and it's in different countries it's okay. I mean, it's just representative of just how different, you know, people are in the world, you know, and geographically speaking, you know, that there's, you know, different world views and what is acceptable, what is possible, you know, it's just so varied. But gosh, we know, Elliot, we're down to the last few minutes here. I mean, the hour has flown by, and we hardly even touched the amount of information in your book. So, but I guess, you know, in closing, what is it that you hope the reader will get from reading Brave New Mind? What is it that you would like to see happen as a result of someone reading your book?
My greatest delight is I have put this information out, as I said, because I feel I cannot not gift this to others, and my greatest delight is seeing other people get it and actually find new ways to use these ideas and technology, because that's what it is, a whole group of seeds to plant a garden. And so my greatest delight is to see somebody else come along with a whole new idea that was generated from one of these 25 aspects.
Or
they're using it in a different way. This is delightful for everybody concerned. So this is how we can create that wind of the X power, I think.
Yeah, great. Well, I'll have you. I mean, it is very thought provoking. I mean, and it is very much a seeding, you know, as far as a different thought patterns, different perspectives. And like I said, I mean, I truly enjoyed reading the book. And you know, and it's sometimes, you know, when people present, you know, the different types of topics that, like, you have, sometimes it can be dry and, you know, kind of hard to grasp, but you were very concise, very clear, you know, in what you were trying to present. And so for me, you know, it was fun. You know, and I think that not only is it going to be useful, but it, you know, to have, you know, something like that and it'd be fun, I think it just also makes the ideas take root even stronger.
Absolutely. We've spoken about this so much, with so much misery in the world and so much misery that all of us in the human condition have to go through at various times in our lives and with our families and others. This sense of joy of creation, joy of working together, joy of having other people who understand this kind of thing creates a great new platform of confidence to move ahead into the future. And that's really what Homo Novus, Future Man, is all about.
That's great. Well, Elliot, thank you for your time today. I'll be sure to put your book on my recommended reading list, and I'm sure I'll be talking about it a lot in the future. So I really thank you for your time today. I've really enjoyed our chat.
Well, thank you, Robert, and I hope our listeners found a few sparks there for their own creative fires.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Dr. Elliot Maynard, author of Brave New Mind, Living in Future Science. And again, I highly recommend his book. It's available at Amazon in Kindle format, soon to be in print form. Also, again, go to YouTube and type in Elliot Maynard's name and check out his videos there. I'm sure you will find them very informative. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.